From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Hello, Chiefs Kingdom. Welcome back to the show. We have a great one for you. We have Pro Football Focus's Eric Ear joining us, and we're going to go through all kinds of aspects about the quarterback, the Chiefs in general, defenses are likely to see, all kinds of things here coming up on the show. Want to start today by saying please check out Seth over at The Athletic and all of Chris's work at LockedOnChiefs.com, as well as my work at RGR Football on YouTube. Today, a couple of things. First and foremost, as we record this, it's Monday afternoon, and Sammy Watkins left practice early for the Chiefs this morning on a Monday morning before the first preseason game. It's been reported that it's precautionary. It has to do with his hip, and it's not anything being terribly alarmed about. And that said, that's great news. But just keep an eye on it, because this is one of the things about Sammy in his history that has been a concern, is his ability to stay healthy. So let's hope it doesn't turn into a nagging injury. We want to keep a close eye on that. Sounds like the Chiefs are being very cautious, so that's a good sign. But we will keep it up to tabs. I don't know if it's anything that'll hold him out of this first preseason game. If it's up to me, I think it should. No reason to march him out there if he's got any kind of hiccup going on. So hopefully they take the high road and maybe hold him out Thursday. Beyond that, we heard from Eric Bieniemy, had some nice things to say. He and Chris Conley both mentioned how the recall for Pat Mahomes is something that really stands him apart, and that when he goes back to plays from OTAs, he can remember outcomes. He can remember what he's doing. It's recall, the word that they use. I think that's really important. And like we've been saying, the interceptions and everything, it's about making mistakes but learning from them. And I think that's what we're seeing is evidence and confirmed by Bieniemy and Conley today. Another thing that stood out to me is that a word Conley used about Bieniemy, and that's grit. He's a guy that comes from the running back position, played in college, had that, you know, national championship, you know, leaping hurdle type maneuver, kind of iconic pose in college football history. And I've got a lot of questions from fans about why he's the OC, and it comes down to a coach's ability to get the most out of his players. And he is a guy that brings grit, that brings intensity. And I think it's really good to see him apply that, not just to the running back room, but across the offense. And it seems that Conley agrees with that. And I think he's looking for players to play fast. That's the name of the day. He wants to let them be athletes, not think too much, and get them out there and doing what they do. And I think that's a real natural way to go about it, especially with a young team. And I'm encouraged to see a guy that has that much intensity and drive and grit push this team. So for right now, that's where we'll leave it, and we'll talk to Eric Ear. Well, folks, it's been a little bit, and he's been extremely busy, as have all the guys over at PFF. And we'll talk about some of their products, but right now we're lucky enough to get Eric Ear back. And we had a couple of hiccups early in the discussion in terms of audio levels, and Eric was on a different connection. And he's in between homes, and Eric just recently relocated from where he had been teaching and is now in Ohio, down in Cincinnati, where PFF is headquartered. And really, I think that's probably what the sound issue was from. So I had to cut a little bit off the beginning of this interview, but we're going to pick it up and fill in the spot. And really what I was asking about is what the transition is like and what caused Chris Collinsworth to pull the company in that direction.
So basically his, you know, what he wanted to do, was, you know, be able to prep as well for, you know, for two games a week. And he just didn't have, I think the, you know, the manpower or whatever to do it. So then he liked PFF as a service. So then he just bought the company in 2014.
You know, like you do.
Like you do, right? Right.
Well, you know, welcome to Ohio then, I guess. A little bit different climate, huh?
Yes, it's very different than where I used to live. I think the winters will probably be a bit tricky, you know, in terms of, like, I heard it ice is here and stuff like that, you know, more quickly, but I'll be happy when there's not quite as much snow on the ground, you know, during the winter months.
I can imagine. You know, before we get into the meat of it, I just want to touch real quickly on what your take is on the fact that the Chiefs showed so much interest in Bashaud Breeland and where you feel their cornerback group is.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm of the persuasion that they need cornerback help. So, you know, Kendall Fuller, I think, is a great addition. And I think that I think he'll be very good. My issue, you know, with that is that he's mostly been good on the inside of the defense since coming into the league. And so, you know, teams play nickel, you know, 60-70% of the time. Or dime even. And so we got to have guys to play on the outside. And so that's going to mean guys like Amerson and guys like Nelson are going to have to play well. And they have at times. I think we've given Amerson the most improved player of the year award once at PFF, but that meant that he had to be cut by Washington. He was so bad before. And then he, you know, fell out of favor in Oakland as well. Nelson has mostly been an inside guy for the Chiefs and struggled on the outside. So that'll be interesting. Reeland has had some good data. He's had some bad data. I think sort of a poor man's Marcus Peters in that, you know, he led the, I think he was second in the NFL or first in the NFL in penalties produced last season. And I believe it was also missed tackles or something of that nature. He also was pretty high in. So I think he was very much somebody that, like, if Chiefs fans were annoyed by Marcus Peters and his sort of run support and his penalties, Rashad Breeland will probably be a little bit disappointing to them.
Well, and we saw what Travis Kelce was able to do to him, so at least he'll get better practicing against Travis all the time. But, you know, and I feel the same way. I think really it smacks of the team's recognition that they don't have the athletes that they want there. And I'm looking for the scheme to start shifting. And when you look at what they did in drafting Armani Watts, bringing in Dorian O'Daniel, I have a touch of a feeling that they're going to go more towards the zone. And this is a team that was, I think, 63% or something, right, in nickel or dime last season?
Yeah, well, not only that, but they were very much like a not a press man necessarily, but they were very much a man team. And I think that having, you know, somebody like Peters affords you that capability. But, you know, instead, you know, when you don't have the guys on the outside that can cover man-to-man, you know, you probably a zone is probably a better option. On the other hand, they do have Eric Berry, who I think has covered a multitude of sins for the defense over his time. So I don't know. The secondary, especially as you said with Armani Watts coming in, you know, maybe having Sorensen and Murray and O'Daniel kind of in, like, you know, better roles for them. I think that you could possibly make a case that their secondary is better. But I do think that they'll have to be more creative than they have in the past in order to see it.
Well, folks, I think that's a good place to start. We're going to take a quick second. We're going to come back and talk about the topic of the day, of the week, of the month. That would be your quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. Preseason games are about to kick off, and that means the Chiefs' regular season games are right around the corner. This season, don't wait around watching the Chiefs from home when you can be at Arrowhead, in the crowd, cheering in person, thanks to Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is offering Locked On Chiefs listeners 10% off their first ticket order when you use our exclusive promo code Locked On. New customers only, and the offer's good through the end of August. And that code, again, is Locked On. Preseason and regular season tickets are available now. And the Chiefs kick off their home schedule. You can be there for all the excitement. Go to VividSeats.com or download the app and enter the promo code Locked On for 10% off your first order. The NFL is back, and Vivid wants you to get into the game. And really, the talk of the town is this rookie, this kid that's taking over. What we've seen is a high-powered offense for the most part, other than a position or two. And so far, I know that there's been a lot of hype, and I've been one that's trying to slow down the hype train. How enthusiastic are you at this point after seeing both the Denver game, but a little bit of this offseason as well?
I mean, I think what's the best about Mahomes is that the Chiefs have made a commitment to this idea that if he is bad, we'll all know it. So one market that I'm very familiar with is the Minnesota market. In that market, they had Teddy Bridgewater, but they also, when he was playing quarterback, in his second season, they went 11-5, but Adrian Peterson won the rushing title, and they kind of condensed the offense into, like, a bunch of tight ends, a bunch of backs, and really, like, Bridgewater, I think, graded well and everything like that, but in the mind of observers, there was still a huge question mark as to whether he could play in, like, a high-powered, throw-the-ball-a-lot offense. This is not going to happen with Mahomes because they put Sammy Watkins on the outside to go with Tyreek Hill. They have Travis Kelce, who led all tight ends in, you know, yards after the catch and deep receiving yards. You know, Kareem Hunt in the backfield, Spencer Ware in the backfield, which I think is also a sneaky thing as long as those two guys can get healthy. And an offensive line that's been in the top 10 in our pass blocking efficiency for the last 2 years. If Mahomes is going to be bad, it's going to be not because of anything else. It's going to be because of him. And it's actually, I think, quite a bit more likely that Andy Reid and the aforementioned like supporting cast can sort of come together and give Patrick Mahomes that platform that any rookie quarterback, I think, would be, you know, starving to have.
Well, and I like that you mentioned the platform, and you certainly highlighted Travis Kelce. And I think this is kind of unique, especially for you guys at PFF, not having a whole lot of data to go off of with Mahomes. But beyond Kelce, and we know what Tyreek Hill can do. I always say his name incorrectly. I don't know why. But give me your impression. I look at what Sammy Watkins has done in his travels around this league to this point, and I still feel like he's shown spark, but I don't think he's gotten the full treatment of what he's able to do. And are you optimistic, or do you think there's a learning curve there? What do you see for Sammy Watkins?
Yeah, I mean, I think Watkins a season ago was very interesting, right? Because what you saw is that you saw a guy that can convert relatively few targets into like 8 touchdowns. And at the same time, you know, you also saw him, I think, being able to, like, he never, like, caused a stir in Los Angeles. But in many ways, I thought he opened up the offense by being a guy that could take the top off of a defense. And so coming in where he's not the number one receiver, but he's, like, this complimentary guy that can sort of make plays, especially down in the red zone. I think one thing that's difficult about the Chiefs offensively is their tight end is more of an athletic guy. And less of this kind of like bully who catches fades. And so I think the Chiefs have done a poor job of the red zone because I think that the receivers have had, you know, kind of a difficult time separating down there or being big enough to shield off defenders down there. I think Watkins gives you an opportunity with sort of a bigger body and kind of a you know, knack for getting into the end zone. I'm optimistic. I think one of the difficulties was he wasn't efficient in Los Angeles, so he didn't turn routes run into yards that much. But I think that was because of a balanced offense that, because of him, was able to go to guys like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, the latter a rookie and the former a guy who hadn't really been all that successful in the NFL prior to playing with Watkins.
Well, and balance is really the key, right? When you look at what all these targets that Pat Mahomes has to spread around, I think it's interesting because I could see the same thing happening for Sammy this year, given that he's got Tyreek and Kelce and Hunt. Or do you think that somebody's going to take a step forward and be the go-to or the primary?
You know, I think it's going to be very similar to a season ago where, Tyreek Hill is a guy who there might be games where he isn't, you know, he's not a player where on 3rd and 8, you know, kind of coming back to the Vikings, but like Chris Carter, you know that's the guy you're going to target on 3rd and long. Tyreek Hill, I don't think is ever going to be that player. But what I do think is he's going to have enough like 5 catch, 165 yard games to get the 70 catches and 1,000 yards that you need to sort of be a number one statistically. And then I think Watkins is going to come in and I think have, you know, I think his numbers will be, you know, somewhere in the 50 to 70 catch range. You know, 750 to 1,000 yards. And then I think Kelce's really going to be the more go-to guy where you kind of – he's the guy on the long yardage situations that Mahomes is going to look to.
Now, I know you're a guy that looks at the betting lines and how to go about that. If you were going to pick one to be the leading receiver, where would you put your
– Kelce, especially from the reception standpoint. Yardage, I think Hill is still probably the leader, but – Kelce, I think, is probably going to get the most targets.
Well, shoot, I guess I'll have to find something to disagree with you about. Oh, folks, we'll take another quick break, and then we do have something because I want to talk about this run versus pass thing. And we're back. And if you missed the beginning, you probably didn't realize just how adamant Eric happens to be about the efficiency of passing versus the run game. And I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist. So if you, Eric, are trying to convince me that one of my co-hosts just did a piece for The Athletic on His ideal offense this year for Mahomes and Andy Reid would be 80% pass. Is that something you're down with?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about passing all the time is we've never seen a team do it, right? So, you know, everybody's comeback is always, well, you can't pass that. You can't pass every down because teams will come up with ways. And that's probably true. But at the same time, like, we've never seen it actually happen. And so, you know, I like Seth's idea. I think it is clear and unequivocal that teams simply run the ball too much in the NFL. And whether you're looking at it from, like, the weird thing is that a team can be relatively successful running the ball. They can be in the top. Like, last season, there was only one team that had positive expected points running the ball on average, and that was Dallas. But you can be a relatively good running team, for example, New Orleans, but your passing game is still better, right? And there was only, I think, two teams last year, chiefly Cleveland Browns, for whom running the ball was a better play, and that was because their quarterback was so bad that you were dumping points every time you dropped back to throw with him. It's simply one of those things where running the football is risk averse and it makes us feel good, but on a play by play basis, getting a 3 yard gain on 2nd and 7 is not putting you in that good of a situation on 3rd down. Throwing the ball and picking up the 1st down on 2nd down is putting you in a good position to move the football play for play. And that's kind of where I think the expected points and sort of the idea of, like, looking at it from a how close are you to scoring this drive is sort of better than looking at it from, like, oh, this is a 3 yard gain, not the greatest, but also not a huge disaster, versus, you know, because, you know, passing is just on a per play basis or more yards or gain.
Well, the thing that stands out to me, and I can get with what you're saying. For me, my perspective is different. I look at the game as a whole, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the hole that you can get in for if a team were to get to that 80% threshold of passing, the amount of first downs where you have incompletes, how would that factor into the contingency of going to 2nd and 10 rather than having that minuscule 3 yard gain?
Yeah, but the thing is I don't see a huge distinction between 2nd and 10 and 2nd and 9, 8, or 7, which is what you get oftentimes when you run the ball on first down. What you don't get a lot of when you run the ball on first down are other first downs, right? And what you don't get on first down when you run the ball are 2nd and 1 or 2nd and 2. Your run offense has to be pretty successful for you to turn first down into another first down or a 2nd and really short. And that's why there are situations where running the ball is a good play. 2nd and 2 or 3, 1, those are good plays. 3rd and 1, 2, or 3, those are good. But ultimately, what you want to be doing with the football is getting first downs. And generally speaking, throwing the ball is the most efficient way of doing that. And, you know, and to me, like, that's, you know, there was a discussion on Twitter yesterday about, if you're an underdog, should you run the ball to sort of bleed variance? It's like, actually, no. If you want to have more possessions, if you want to lengthen possessions, you should actually pass, because if you run and you're unsuccessful on 1st and 2nd down, you have a long yardage situation. And if you're an underdog, your quarterback is less likely to be able to convert on, you know, 3rd and long than he is on 2nd or 1st and long.
I guess that's fair. You know, in my old adage, or at least the way that the philosophy has gone through the years, that I still kind of believe in, not kind of, I do believe in it. But tell me what you think of the aspect of, especially when you're playing a superior team and you are the underdog, the physical wear in quarter by quarter, wearing that team down with the run game, so that physically the advantage that they have in performance or maybe athleticism maybe is knocked down to the point where you can have a minuscule or even no disparity at all to where they're average and try to win a game in the 4th quarter because you've been physical the other 3.
I mean, that is, I think, like the legend, right? But I think that there's been studies that have basically said that defenses don't wear down anymore in the sense that, you know, statistically speaking, run defenses are no worse after having played the run multiple times during a game. And so, you know, to me, I just think that that's something where, you know, as an old tight end and a guy that used to love run blocking, I just had to discard that idea, even though I believed it for most of my career and most of my time after playing football.
I'm clearly not there yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. And, you know, I would say not to be a, when I played the game guy, but I certainly do remember watching film and having this revelation that my team was better at doing everything when I wasn't in the game, and when we weren't, you know, the threat to run was kind of silly because all it did was, it didn't do a whole lot, actually. The threat to run, you know, the threat was about 4 yards every time, which isn't that many yards, to be quite honest.
Well, I don't think anybody's get to the 80% threshold. Do you?
I mean, I think the Patriots have done it before, and if any team sort of demonstrates success, you know, it's the Patriots. I remember in 2006, not to get that far back, but the Minnesota Vikings gave up like about 57 yards a game on the ground the whole year, which I think was the best in league history. And the Patriots came in on a Monday night game and literally ran the first play, lost 8 yards, and then threw basically every single play after that and won like 31-7 because it was like, you know, it was one of those things where I think they pushed the extreme. We just don't have enough data on that historically, but I would say it's probably something that we want to generate data for, so we know that limit.
Well, somebody might give you a shot at it. It might even be the Chiefs this
season. Yeah, Hunt has a second year slump or is injured or something. I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, overall, do you see the shift in the offense being that extreme, or do you think that Andy's going to try to pepper it in and take a little bit of time in terms of putting it all on Mahomes' shoulders?
You know, I do think that they're going to explore, you know, obviously Smith was a good athlete, so I think that they're going to, you know, sort of maintain, and Mahomes is a good athlete too. I think they're going to maintain some of the stuff that they had with Smith. But I do think that they're going to try, you know, to be a little bit more high variance, have Mahomes throw the ball downfield. You know, Smith had a really successful year last year throwing the ball downfield, but he didn't do it that much. You know, I think his rates were basically the same. He just hit on a lot more of them. So I would say that Reed probably will try to go downfield more with Mahomes than he did with Smith. I don't know as far as running the ball more. I just don't know. I think Reed has always been a guy that's shied away from running the ball a lot, and I think he'll maintain that.
And I'll get used to it, I guess. Now, folks, you should be listening to the PFF podcast already. If you're not, I don't know what you're doing. I'll give you a link in the show notes. But does this move to Cincinnati mean you're going to do more written work? Or are we still looking at you audiovisual kind of thing? What's changing for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll still have the PFF forecast every single week. I think during the season, we're probably going to have at least 2 episodes a week. I'll do more written stuff. We have some more college content, which is great. We got some exciting deals coming up with, you know, for college stuff. And now that we're on our fifth year of doing college, I think it's going to be pretty exciting times. And then some more stuff on the YouTube channel and everything. So if you want to, you know, subscribe to our YouTube channel, there's a lot of great content on there. I'm only, you know, of the ocean that is there, I'm only basically responsible for a bucket and a half so far, but I think that'll increase.
Folks, make sure you check that out. Eric, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for us today, folks. Remember, we'll have more with Seth Kaiser. We're working on a couple of new guests. We're getting ready for the Thursday night game. And we are going to have a immediate post-game show that we will record as soon as we possibly can after the first preseason game. We'll get that up for you Thursday night before you all have to hit the sack. It'll definitely be ready for Friday morning, so keep an ear out for that. And we hope you have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.